flame, stories of romance. I'm Mardell, reading The Blue Castle by L.M. Montgomery. Chapter 14. Life cannot stop because tragedy enters it. Meals must be made ready, though a son dies, and porches must be repaired, even if your only daughter is going out of her mind. Mrs. Frederick, in her systematic way, had long ago appointed the second week in June for the repairing of the front porch, the roof of which was sagging dangerously. Roaring Abel had been engaged to do it many moons before, and Roaring Abel promptly appeared on the morning of the first day of the second week and fell to work. Of course, he was drunk. Roaring Abel was never anything but drunk, but he was only in the first stage, which made him talkative and genial. The odor of whiskey on his breath nearly drove Mrs. Frederick and Cousin Stickles wild at dinner. Even Valency, with all her emancipation, did not like it. But she liked Abel, and she liked his vivid, eloquent talk. And after she washed the dinner dishes, she went out and sat on the steps and talked to him. Mrs. Frederick and Cousin Stickles thought it a terrible proceeding, but what could they do? Valency only smiled mockingly at them when they called her in and did not go. It was so easy to defy once you got started. The first step was the only one that really counted. They were both afraid to say anything more to her lest she might make a scene before Roaring Abel, who would spread it all over the country with his own characteristic comments and exaggerations. It was too cold a day, in spite of the June sunshine, for Mrs. Frederick to sit at the dining-room window and listen to what was said. She had to shut the window, and Valency and Roaring Abel had their talk to themselves. But if Mrs. Frederick had known what the outcome of that talk was to be, she would have prevented it if the porch was never repaired. Valency sat on the steps, defiant of the chill breeze of this cold June, which had made Aunt Isabel aver the seasons were changing. She did not care whether she caught a cold or not. It was delightful to sit there in that cold, beautiful, fragrant world and feel free. She filled her lungs with a clean, lovely wind and held out her arms to it and let it tear her hair to pieces while she listened to Roaring Abel, who told her his troubles between intervals of hammering gaily in time to his Scottish songs. Valency liked to hear him. Every stroke of his hammer fell true to the note. Old Abel Gay, in spite of his 70 years, was handsome still, in a stately, patriarchal manner. His tremendous beard falling down over his blue flannel shirt was still a flaming, untouched red, though his shock of hair was white as snow, and his eyes were a fiery, youthful blue. His enormous reddish-white eyebrows were more like mustaches than eyebrows. Perhaps this was why he always kept his upper lip scrupulously shaved. His cheeks were red, his nose ought to have been, but wasn't. It was a fine, upstanding, aquiline nose, such as the noblest Roman of them all might have rejoiced in. Abel was 6'2" in his stockings, broad-shouldered, lean-hipped. In his youth he had been a famous lover, finding all women too charming to bind himself to one. His years had been a wild, colorful panorama of follies and adventure, gallantries, fortunes, and misfortunes. He had been 45 before he married, a pretty slip of a girl, whom his goings-on killed in a few years. Abel was piously drunk at her funeral, and insisted on repeating the 55th chapter of Isaiah. Abel knew most of the Bible and all the Psalms by heart. While the minister whom he disliked prayed or tried to pray, thereafter his house was run by an untidy old cousin who cooked his meals and kept things going after a fashion. In this unpromising environment, little Cecilia Gay had grown up. Balancy had known Sissy Gay fairly well in the democracy of the public school, though Sissy had been 3 years younger than she. After they left school, their paths diverged, and she had seen nothing of her. Old Abel was a Presbyterian. That is, he got a Presbyterian preacher to marry him, baptize his child, and bury his wife. And he knew more about Presbyterian theology than most ministers, which made him a terror to them in arguments. But Roaring Abel never went to church. Every Presbyterian minister who had been in Deerwood had tried his hand once at reforming Roaring Abel, but he had not been pestered of late. Reverend Mr. Bentley had been in Deerwood for 8 years, but he had not sought out Roaring Abel since the first 3 months of his pastorate. He had called on Roaring Abel then and found him in the theological stage of drunkenness, which always followed the sentimental, maudlin one, and preceded the roaring, blasphemous one, the eloquently prayerful one in which he realized himself temporarily and intensely as a sinner in the hands of an angry God was the final one. Abel never went beyond it. He generally fell asleep on his knees and awakened sober, but he had never been dead drunk in his life. He told Mr. Bentley that he was a sound Presbyterian and sure of his election. He had no sins that he knew of to repent of. "Have you never done anything in your life that you were sorry for?" asked Mr. Bentley. Roaring Abel scratched his bushy white head and pretended to reflect. "Well, yes," he said finally. "There were some women I might have kissed and didn't. I've always been sorry for that." Mr. Bentley went out and went home. Abel had seen that Sissy was properly baptized, jovially drunk at the same time himself. He made her go to church and Sunday school regularly. The church people took her up, and she was in turn a member of the mission band, the Girls' Guide, and the Young Women's Missionary Society. She was a faithful, unobtrusive, sincere little worker, and everybody liked Sissy Gay and was sorry for her. She was so modest and sensitive, and pretty in that delicate, elusive fashion of beauty, which fades so quickly if life is not kept in it by love and tenderness. But then liking and pity did not prevent them from tearing her in pieces like hungry cats when the catastrophe came. 4 years previously, Sissy Gay had gone up to a Muskoka hotel as a summer waitress, and when she had come back in the fall, she was a changed creature. She hid herself away and went nowhere. The reason soon leaked out and scandal raged. That winter, Sissy's baby was born. Nobody ever knew who the father was. Sissy kept her poor, pale lips tightly locked on her sorry secret. Nobody dared ask Roaring Abel any questions about it. Rumor and surmise laid the guilt at Barney Snaith's door, because diligent inquiry among the other maids at the hotel revealed the fact that nobody there had ever seen Sissy Gay with a fellow. She kept herself to herself, they said rather resentfully. Too good for our dances, and now look. The baby had lived for a year. After its death, Sissy faded away. 2 years ago, Dr. Marsh had given her only 6 months to live. Her lungs were hopelessly diseased. But she was still alive. Nobody went to see her. Women would not go to Roaring Abel's house. Mr. Bentley had gone once, when he knew Abel was away, but the dreadful old creature who was scrubbing the kitchen floor told him Sissy wouldn't see anyone. The old cousin had died, and Roaring Abel had had 2 or 3 disreputable housekeepers, the only kind who could be prevailed on to go to a house where a girl was dying of consumption. But the last one had left, and Roaring Abel had now no one to wait on Sissy and do for him. This was the burden of his plaint to Valency, and he condemned the hypocrites of Deerwood and its surrounding community with some rich, meaty oaths that happened to reach Cousin Stickles' ears as she passed through the hall and nearly finished the poor lady. Was Valency listening to that? Valency hardly noticed the profanity. Her attention was focused on the horrible thought of poor, unhappy, disgraced little Sissy Gay, ill and helpless in that forlorn old house out on the mysterious road, without a soul to help or comfort her. And this in a nominally Christian community in the year of grace 19 and some odd? Do you mean to say that Sissy is all alone there now with nobody to do anything for her? Nobody? Oh, she can move about a bit and get a bite and a sup when she wants it, but she can't work. It's darn hard for a man to work hard all day, go home at night tired and hungry, and cook his own meals. Sometimes I'm sorry I kicked old Rachel Edwards out. Abel described Rachel picturesquely. Her face looked as if it had worn out 100 bodies, and she moped. Talk about temper. Temper's nothing to moping. She was too slow to catch worms and dirty. Dirty. Now, I ain't unreasonable. I know a man has to eat a peck before he dies, but she went over the limit. Now, what do you suppose I saw that lady do? She'd made some pumpkin jam. She had it on the table in glass jars with a top saw, and the dog got up on the table and stuck his paw into one of them. Oh, what did she do? She just took hold of the dog, wrung the syrup off his paw back into the jar, then screwed the top on and set it in the pantry. I sets open the door and says to her, "Go." The dame went, and I fired the jars of pumpkin after her, two at a time. Thought I'd die laughing, seeing old Rachel run with them pumpkin jars raining after her. She stole everywhere. I'm crazy. So nobody'll come for love or money.
But Sissy must have someone to look after her, insisted Valency, whose mind was centered on this aspect of the case. She did not care whether Roaring Abel had anyone to cook for him or not, but her heart was wrung for Cecilia Gay.
Ah, she gets on. Barney Snaith always drops in when he's passing and does anything she wants done. Brings her oranges, flowers, and things. Ah, there's a Christian for you.
Yet that sanctimonious, sniveling parcel of St. Andrew's people wouldn't be seen on the same side of the road with him.
Their dogs will go to heaven before they do. And their minister, slick as if the cat had licked him.
There are plenty of good people, both in St. Andrew's and St. George's, who would be kind to Sissy if you would behave yourself, said Valency severely. They're afraid to go near your place.
Because I'm such a sad old dog, but I don't bite. Never bit anyone in my life. Few loose words spilled around don't hurt anyone. I'm not asking people to come. Don't want 'em poking and prying about. What I want is a housekeeper. If I shaved every Saturday and went to church, I'd get all the housekeepers I'd want. I'd be respectable then. What's the use of going to church when it's all settled by predestination? Now tell me that, miss.
Is it? Said Valency.
Yes. Can't get around it nohow. Wish I could. I don't want either heaven or hell for steady. Wish a man could have 'em mixed in equal proportions.
Isn't that the way it is in this world? Said Valency thoughtfully, but rather as if her thought was concerned with something else than theology.
No! No! Boomed Abel, striking a tremendous blow on a stubborn nail. There's too much hell here. Entirely too much hell. That's why I get drunk so often. Set you free for a little while, free from yourself. Yes, by God, free from predestination. Ever try it?
No, I've got another way of getting free, said Valency absently. But about Sissy now, she must have someone to look after her.
What are you harping on Sis for? Seems to me you ain't bothered much about her up to now. You never even come to see her. And she used to like you so well.
I should have, said Valency, but never mind, you wouldn't understand. The point is, you must have a housekeeper.
Well, where am I to get one? I can pay decent wages if I could get a decent woman. Do you think I like old hags?
Will I do? Said Valency. Please join me next time for another romantic chapter of The Blue Castle by L.M. Montgomery here on Love's Tender Flame. Until then, love deeply and live beautifully.